Guru Nation, welcome to episode 820 of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. In this episode, I talked to Gayna Whitaker. She's the director of U.S. site engagement for AstraZeneca. And we really got into a lot of deep conversations. Like early on, this was my first time ever speaking to her. And right off the bat, we get into some really deep stuff. And then we bring it back to site engagement, diversity, and the usual topics of du jour for this year and probably a few more years to come. A lot of important stuff here. Everybody connect with Gayna in the show notes. And also really quick, shout out to the sponsors, Inado. Inado's a free place to get studies for your site. Yes, you do need therapeutic area expertise, but once you have that established, it's a no-brainer. They don't get involved in contracts and budgets or anything else. Free. Can't beat that. Also, shout out to our next sponsor, Creo. Creo is my eSource, my eReg, my CTMS, my invoicing system, my patient recruitment portal, my record retrieval tool. It's so much and more. Pay only for what you use. Check it out in the show notes below.
Gayna Whitaker, everyone. This is like the industry is small, but also big at the same time. And this is an example of it being big, maybe an example of both. Because we were just talking about we were connected for a while on LinkedIn, but never actually interacted, met, messaged, anything. And I think recently I saw you on a comment on something. Who knows? Like, that's how social media works. And I was like, let me look at this person's profile. For some reason, I was like, it intrigued me. Your comment, I can't even remember anything about it. And then I was like, wait a minute, why haven't I had Gayna on before? Like, you've done basically feasibility. Now you're like director level. Now you're director of US site engagement and a big pharma. You've worked for the big CROs, big pharma, all over the place, clinical scientist. At one point, it's a really good career so far, an interesting one at that, and especially now in your new role, like director of feasibility for sites, there's a lot of sites watching, and they're gonna want to get a hold of you now. So thank you for coming on. I really appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation. And when I saw the invitation, I was like, how did he find out about me? And what could I say? I'm just excited to be here and to see where this conversation goes. Just when you reached out to me for the past couple of days, all kinds of things have flashed through my mind about my career, the highs, the lows, and all kinds of things that I think that have been critical for me to get to where I am today. So thank you for having me on today.
Of course, and that just shows you that, the algorithm, we complain about it a lot, but in this case it did its job. Because I'm just scrolling. I'll scroll, but I'll rarely like reply to, unless it's to me. But I saw your reply on some post and it wasn't even mine. And I was like, let me click. Who is this person? It seems interesting take. And so thank you. I mean, maybe we'll start with the highs and lows. Which one of them are more frequent?
Well, I think because I do recognize the different milestones, like every 10 years of my career in the elevation, I was just having a conversation that I thought applied that made me think about this and the opportunities that I thought I missed or things that didn't go well in my career and felt like there was some inadequacy, or maybe they just didn't give me the opportunity, or if something happened. And I guess part of it, and it's just me jumping right into it, just skipping past, and maybe we'll touch on, my career path and how it got me to this place. But I thought about the opportunities that I didn't get, and referring to someone else who I was speaking to in a situation that they were going through personally is where I am now in my life. With a no is a blessing for me.
Mm.
A no is a blessing because now I understand that that no means that whoever I interviewed with or whoever I was, even with business, was you would not support my ideas. You would not be open to any innovation, anything that I had to offer. And you may even slow down the progress or my purpose. So I need to be somewhere where I could grow, develop, and contribute freely without feeling in bondage to a certain set of rules that people have. And, I thought about some of those lows a lot lately. And those lows I felt at the time, I felt like maybe it was an attack against me. But now I realize that those no's were protection.
That's a good way to look at it, especially like from a spiritual lens, and doesn't matter what religion or any religion, you can be spiritual. Yeah, I haven't looked at it through that perspective. I usually look at no as like not that way. That's kind of how I've been trained. Like if I really want it, no's not gonna stop me. But if I don't really want it, no's like, okay, well, let's just do something else. But yours is a whole deeper level because it's more about your destiny and about the universe kind of showing its signs that, hey, you know what? Everything's for a reason. Maybe that's a big reason. Like maybe that person or whomever would have hired you or promoted you, but then blocked you. Like it would have been worse than just hearing no.
Yeah, it's, and we're not having the support that you needed if you wanted to speak up, or all of your ideas would have been shut down. I just remember I was in a role maybe 15 years ago. And I'll never forget that I was explaining, that maybe we could be creative in this situation. And she's like, "Well, what do you mean by being creative? Like, this isn't a creative job, or, this is how we do it. And, we follow these SOPs." And, I respected the SOPs, but I just thought that there were other ways to do it. And I realized in that situation that I began to shut down and I stopped giving my opinion in the calls. I would just listen to everyone. And sometimes I would be so quiet that they probably didn't think I was engaged or I was paying attention, but maybe I felt like I wasn't valued, or maybe if I spoke up that someone would embarrass me in leadership and say that wasn't a good idea. I mean, it was just different situations, I can recall like that really made me be quiet in meetings. And I can say now I'm in a good space. The company that I'm at now, my ideas are welcome. I mean, still a little bit quiet at times. Most people like surprised by that, but I feel freer now. And I believe I'm where I'm supposed to be. I have the support that I need. I'm encouraged to speak up, and I still have to say it's okay because I had experience. I guess maybe that's a trauma, that I had experienced in the past, or even situations where I probably should have spoken up more, but because of that trauma, I missed opportunities in positions where I could have spoken up.
It's for those like myself that, we've probably been in the industry around the same amount of time, but I've been self-employed almost all of that time, and I feel like that freedom that you were talking about comes easier as a business owner. The price is you have to have a successful company or else you don't earn that freedom. But I think that freedom as an employee, like lifelong employee, comes at a harder price in many ways because it's not financial, it's killing your spirit. And you ever see that meme of people like all diverse, some people wearing pink, some people have like purple hair spiked up, some people regular, and then they walk through like this corporate job door and then they come out all looking the same. That's a powerful meme to me. I've never really been an employee, but I look at that and I'm like, yeah, no, I don't think I could do that. And it feels like you are touching on this topic in a way, even if indirectly.
I think what keeps me grounded is, I know where I've come from. I'm in contact with where I come from. I'm reminded and I'm thankful every day that I have this opportunity. I think when you get into the mindset where you don't appreciate it anymore, or you just get frustrated very easily about situations. But when you think about I'm in an industry where I can make an impact on people's lives, and what I've accomplished this far and the things that I've done and what I had to do to get here, I'm appreciative. I don't take it for granted. I don't think anyone owes me anything. I feel like this is like my dream come true. Some people may want to go into the NBA. Someone may want to, go into being a physician. I'm right where I want to be. And this is my NBA championship. Every time, I walk through the door, and sometimes, we have the finals. If I have to do something like,
How many
defend
rings do you
my
have?
work,
How many rings do you
I got a
have?
couple. It's personal, it's personal, but they're all individual. They different categories. One may be for feasibility. One could be for patient recruitment. One could be work morale. It could be different things. And these are things that I have to do to encourage myself because, throughout my years in the industry, 25 years, it's only been the last few years that I've really had mentorship or people. They don't even know that they're my mentor, that I just, draw from to really help me become gain the things that I like about them, their characteristics on how to navigate and how to be stronger, because there weren't a lot of Black women in the industry when I started. I didn't
Have you
see
seen
any.
that improve? Because you've been
Oh
in
my
for a while,
goodness.
right?
It's improved significantly. There's still a lot of work to be done, but I think, when I started, I used to follow Michelle Sample. She didn't even know that I was following her, like her career, because I had never seen anyone in a powerful position. I remember Frieda Lewis Hall, who is the CEO at Pfizer. I admired her when I was working. I even reached out to her when I was at Pfizer. Just boy,
Wow.
in trouble. I was looking for like, how do you do this, and how do you find your voice, and how, who will protect me if I say something, or and it's nothing that was crazy, but it was a culture shock for me. I grew up in a small town, a small city, and I didn't feel like I was prepared culturally to have just discussions. I couldn't relate to a lot of conversations at work, and I felt isolated. It was just difficult to I'm going down some hole, but
No,
it
this is
was
good.
challenging, and I wanted to find out how can I relate, to my coworkers. And it wasn't I and I could throw out a name who I know all the people who supported me and just welcomed me in and made me feel at home. And I can go back as far as thinking about Melissa Marshall when I was at Wyeth, and she invited me to go to lunch with her and colleagues. And I would listen to the conversations at lunch, and I was like, I can't relate, but it was interesting. I saw a different side of life that I had never heard of before, and I didn't feel out of place. And I started to push myself into other situations so that I could start to understand that there are some commonalities here. As women, as mothers, as doing clinical research, there was so much that we had in common. So my time in the industry has really taught me a lot of lessons. Some of my best friends, come from working in this industry from all different backgrounds. I, have mentors from all different backgrounds, and I'm thankful for the opportunity. So this has just been a great journey for me.
So basically, I mean, you can make even when the old cliche, life gives you lemons, make lemonade. That could apply to this industry easily.
Absolutely.
especially in a corporate role like you. And you've successfully navigated. Now you're director of US site engagement. Can we talk a little bit about that? What is that? What is the sponsor like? I'm seeing a lot of sponsors having these roles now. They didn't always have them before, or maybe they weren't as publicly visible.
Yeah, and there needs to be a point of contact for sites. Usually the way it occurred in the past, if you were part of some metrics or if you had conducted feasibility on a particular TA, you would look through different proprietary resources, which ones I'm thinking of. I don't want to really. I could call them out, I guess. whether you were looking at whether it's clinicaltrials.gov or Citeline or any type of databases they had in DQS, if you were looking at databases of investigational sites who have completed tr several trials in a particular indication, you would develop your site list, right? So if you develop a site list based on th that experience, you're going to have to rank and tier your sites, who have experience and what their metrics look like. Compare them to the benchmark data from historical studies that's been conducted, very similar to the studies that you've done before or what you're trying to research. So a lot of sites are missed that way. Some, of course, that's a database, but what about those sites who don't have a lot of experience or have any experience? They won't be captured there. So, companies do realize now that, we want to really look at sites that aren't touched. We want to know more about the sites from on a personal level. What are your interests? Do they align with our mission and our vision? We need to have partnerships so that we could think of a strategy that's broader than what we typically do. I think it's great to have partnerships without doing a single study. One at a time is not efficient. It's not effective as it could be if you think of the big picture, And, I love attending the conferences for sites because you get to hear the site's voice. And, of
We got
course,
to
I
have you at Save Our
want
Sites next year.
to.
We'll get you on a panel or something like sponsor level. Yeah, we'll work something out for SOS next year. Oklahoma City, you ever been?
Oh no, I haven't.
All right, we'll go. We'll go.
Well, I'm pro site because I started out at a site. I started working in a burn unit a long time ago as a site
So before
coordinator.
the sponsor, you were at site level, like a coordinator or assistant or.
Yeah, I was assistant there at the Nathan Spear Burn Center at Crozier Hospital in Chester, PA. That was my first job out of college. And I worked in a hospital that I was born in, and the doctors
Whoa.
right in. Yeah, it was. I still get chills thinking about that opportunity. It was just amazing to be able to, at this time, of course, if it was over 25 years ago, there was paper based, and you had to go
Oh,
through the
yeah.
course. And they said, okay, you're going to participate in an IRB meeting. What is that? Or we're going to write a SOP, or we're going to write, about sentinel node biopsy and mapping. We need a protocol. This is new. They were a cancer specialist as well as a burn specialist too. So I would do research for the burns, and then I would do research for their oncology practice as well, and hernia repair. They had me doing all kinds of research, and I just developed a real passion and a love for, just research in general. And it just showed me a different light, and I didn't even know that this existed, so
Yeah.
it
So
was
how did you
awesome.
find that job? It was a small town, the hospital you were born in. So you just like applied. If it's anything like Yuma, it's the big one of the biggest employers in the city is the hospital.
Well, it happened because I was thinking about going into taking some post baccalaureate courses at the University of Pennsylvania because I thought about medical school and I thought about where could I go, what could I do? I have this passion. So I end up getting a position as I was doing some type of research, but it was more like from a I first of all, it was a contract position, and it was me looking through charts. I was doing chart review at another practice, but I kept going down, and they at the time they would post different positions on the board at Crozier. So I worked in one building, but I was trying to get a full-time position. But let me tell you, Dan, every time something comes up and I see the pattern, but I didn't see it then, but there's been a pattern. It's like a writing on the wall. This is for you. I saw a job posted that said that they were looking for this study coordinator. So I went down to the office and I talked to the administrative assistant at the front desk, and I asked her about the position. I asked them who had already applied for the position, and she was telling me this gentleman right here had just interview, and I was a little discouraged by it. I said, but that's okay, that's my job. So I end up getting the interview, and I remember saying, during the interview that if I got this job, that I would make my city proud of me, and I would come back and I would want to make a difference. I haven't said
During the
that.
interview,
Yeah, I was talking to
was that the same day?
Dr.
Like you were
Hayes.
there, you talked to the admin, and you said, "Hey, you know what? Can I interview right now?" Or did they schedule you to come back?
It was probably 3 weeks later. 3 weeks
Three
later, I
weeks,
came back
wow.
for it. Yeah. They were doing extensive interviews for this role. And me being fresh out of college, I had just graduated from Penn State, and just working little jobs. I probably had about two jobs at the time when I was working across from, the burn unit. And
Yeah.
I remember just looking around and so like at awe of the doctors, and then I saw the office. They said, well, the administrative assistant said to me, if you got this job, that would be your office. I said, oh, really? I'm like 25 or something like that, 24. And
Yeah.
I looked in the office, I opened the door. We started to have some rapport a little bit. I said, oh, that's going to be my office, And I had the office that looked just like the doctor's offices. So I was like, so we giggled a little bit, and they end up calling me in for an interview. And I did talk to Dr. Hayes, and he was the director of the burn unit, and I met all of the other doctors. And they really supported me. I co-authored a few papers with them. I remember
Wow.
Dr. Heath had me present at the one of the burn conferences, and I'll never forget. He, was showing me how to present, and he showed me how to use the. It was this was so long ago. He
What
was showing me how to use the pointer.
do you think this passion like came across in the interview, or
From
like
what
what
people
did they
tell
see?
me, I've been the same person. Like what you see now is the person I was, but I just evolved a little bit more, probably,
Yeah.
always been passionate. And that's what people have told me. Like I'm thinking, when did I just wake up and this happened? But most people tell me this is who I have been. So.
Yeah, you don't strike me as someone that's just passive, that sits back and whatever. Like you, to me, just talking to you now for like 20 minutes, you strike me as someone that will leave an impression, on others. And that's either a, like a skill or something natural that you have, you know, since birth. I mean, certainly it can be a skill if you don't have it, but I feel like your kind of personality sticks out more in an interview. It could backfire too. Like some people may not want that. Like not, you know, it's not always a good thing, but it, I guess it's good because it's you and you're not going to change for a job, like back to coming full circle to how we started this interview. But I could clearly see that. And I guess that's good advice for people watching that are trying to get a job is maybe a couple of things like be memorable, but don't negotiate your own, like your spirit for just for a job.
Well, thank you for that. I think if people didn't receive who I am, then this is not the place for me. So it's
Yeah.
good. If you come as your authentic self, then you won't have to pretend when you get the job, right?
And it served
So
you well. It served you well, more or less.
I'm thankful because the people that I'm around always just tell me, just continue to be yourself. And and the funny thing, I'm like, well, I know this is the only person that I can be. But, until you really intentionally realize that you can be your authentic self, sometimes you do say, oh, I wish I could be like this person, or I wish I could do this, or I wish I. And I can remember times where I thought that I had to speak faster or I had to be the best speaker. I know I'm not the best speaker. I know that I get lost and I could be in the middle of a sentence and totally forget where I was, but. It is, that's just me. And I'm okay with that, and because that doesn't diminish the goodness that I have in me, what my intentions are, because I will never forget my intentions. I will never forget how to treat people. I will never, it's just certain things I could be in the middle of a sentence, forget, but I might bust out laughing or something, and eventually I'll get back to where I was. But it's not going to cause any harm in anything, And this is even at work. This is at work in the middle of, I'm like, what in the world was I talking? What did I mean to say? Okay. All right. Well, I'll find it. I'll get back to it,
It's definitely easier, like the more experience you get, the more mature you get emotionally, mentally. I know for me, now I'm in my 40s and I don't behave the same way I did in my 20s. But the core me, I think, is still there. It's just I'm less reactionary, and I think that's like a normal thing as you mature. And I'm less afraid, like I'm more confident now. I was always confident, but I think I'm even more so now. If we can switch really quickly, we'll interweave your career with these topics. But in the diversity angle now, not just from an employment standpoint, but from a patient recruitment standpoint, right? And especially like in your role as site engagement specialist, I'm pretty sure, I would put all my money that the company you work for, can we mention them or do your.
I would prefer not to because I'm here
Yeah,
just
just check the
Gaina.
LinkedIn.
But
This
yeah.
is Gaina, not the opinions, not her opinions or hers only, and not of
Only
her
mine. Yes.
employer or any former employer. How about that?
Yes.
Should have
Thank
put
you.
that at the beginning.
At
But
the beginning.
site engagement special, you guys have to be talking about we need patients from diverse backgrounds. I mean, it has to be a conversation. Am I right?
This is the number one goal of my organization. I could brag about them, okay? That's our mission. That's our bold ambition, is to ensure that we are considering this as top of mind, and we are aligning this with our sites, our
But there's
partners. I didn't
good.
say sites, our partners,
Check that. I love that. I want to be a partner with you guys. We actually have a study starting up with you guys soon. I'll tell you afterwards. But there's a right way, I think, and a wrong way to do it. And we're working with a sponsor. I'm definitely not going to say who, but I can see any of them doing this. I want to get your take on We're in a Hispanic market, right? Like, we're a border town. Enough sponsors give us a chance to where now we have experience. It's like 3 years in. We can get Hispanic patients, no problem. We can even get some Native Americans. There's a small percentage of African Americans here. We've had African Americans in our study. Of course, we've had Caucasians, but we're like our bread and butter is like Hispanic, right? So I feel like we were given a lot of these studies early on because of our location, which thank God we did a good job. We got an email recently from a sponsor on a study, something about, as you know, the diversity play, we're very committed to meeting our Latino participation, and they only said Latino. So for some reason they're off on the Latino, which our site doesn't really affect us. That's why I feel like I can talk about it more. For going forward, and they said it's just temporary, we're not amending the protocol. But going forward, for every three Hispanic patients you randomize, we allow you one other. Could be any other race. Now, for us, again, not a huge deal. We can get three more, like, without thinking to get another, any other race we can. But I was talking to the staff, and I was saying, you know, imagine you're a site in Mississippi where it's like predominantly African American, and you got this email, and you're going to tell an African American, let's say an Asian, I mean, there's not too many probably in that area, but you're going to tell an African American, hey, you qualify. Unfortunately, like the sponsor doesn't want us to enroll you because of your race. Like, this is where I think this diversity thing, if not handled like the right way, can turn left really quick. Because the intentions are there. Okay, well, we need more Hispanics. But now you're excluding other potentially underserved. I feel like they didn't think that through, or, I mean, you work closer with these people than me. And this is not your company, by the way. Like, what's in their head? This is couldn't, how did this get approved to get out?
Well, let me start with the idea of course, you have a sample size. If you're recruiting 300 patients, you know, and you have one site who's disproportionately recruiting a patient population, I think there has to be a strategy or some understanding of the feasibility to know what the contribution is, because like you don't want to place all your sites in one state because you're going to get an abundance of that patient population. Because the idea of having diversity is that you want to reflect the population, right? The population of patients who are impacted by that disease area. So it's not even just that if African Americans make up 16% of the population, we want to know how many really are impacted by the disease, the proportion who by the disease. So it's a lot of strategy behind it, and it's very difficult because, you know, when you're looking at feasibility, you're trying to find out, well, what do your demographics look like? You know, what does your patient population look like in your database? And you got to go through there's a lot of criteria, and it's very difficult to identify or quantify the number of patients that you would get from each group, right? You know, so when you're writing a diversity action plan, for example, you know, you're looking at this is what the target is potentially from this group. And it's because you want to see if there are any outliers in safety measures. You want to see if, so you want to make sure that you have a certain number of patients that you can evaluate to look at what are the outcomes, if it's clinically significant. So you don't want to over-recruit in one group because then you can't compare in the data analysis piece. So that is a challenge, and it's very difficult because this is a new space, and we do need thought leaders to give those the feedback and see how it impact patients, because patients are first, you know. So we need to look at it from, well, we don't want to turn a patient away, and we won't turn a patient away if, you know, they have more patients and, you know, than one area than another. We have to, you know, and that just has to come in with the summary and, you know, the clinical study report, you know, at the end, that this, you know, we had to con you know, there were other patients who qualified, and we continue to recruit. I mean, it's just other ways I think that could mitigate that. But if you do end up, I look at it like a cohort type of study. You know, you have to close recruitment sometimes for one cohort because now you want the other cohorts to catch up. So, and it's statistical analysis behind it so that you can, you know,
They do that
quantify.
for male and female a lot, actually, at
So
our sites.
that's the challenge with it. So yeah, it is difficult, you know, and it, you know, but I think it has to be a way to communicate it so that we are not excluding individuals who can benefit from treatment or sites who work hard to care for patients who are underserved and this could benefit them. And I think that has to be the discussion and have that partnership. That's where partnership is important to have that communication.
Yeah, I mean, as sites, we can't control what the sponsors do. I mean, it's their study, it's their money, but if I were that site in Mississippi and I got that email, I mean, I'm working really hard to make sure, like, what if you don't have Hispanics in your city? Like, you're just not going to screen until the sponsor says it's okay. I would go out of my way to go find another study. They talk about competing trials, but what else are you going to do? Like, you can't turn patients away. The patient doesn't know it's coming from a sponsor. They think it's you. And what if that was their first, like, willingness to participate in any trial, and now you just ruin their experience like forever. Like,
I'm
oh, I
taking
went
notes
there,
here.
they don't want,
I'm taking notes
yeah.
here. This is
Imagine you go,
a
I
different
went there,
perspective.
they don't want black people, I'm out. And then they're gonna go tell everyone they know. That site told me they're not gonna screen me because of my race. And like, there's two sides to every story, but no one's listening to sponsors aside. They're gonna listen to the patients. To me, it's like a problem. If I'm a site in that area, I go out of my way to find another study. Hey, you know what? I wouldn't even talk to them about the race thing. I would say, you know what? This obesity study's full right now. We can't, hopefully in like 3 months, but why not try one of these other studies? Try to put them somewhere else, even if it's not the best study for them, which is not really what you're supposed to do as a site. And it's not GCP, but what else can you do?
So I think, I'm taking notes and I'm thinking about it. But these are blind spots, and I think that's why partnerships are important so that we can have a solution, because we don't want a patient to feel like, this is how, you use us when you want to use us, or or have that type of perspective about clinical research, or have any bad taste about their experience with clinical research or being turned away, so.
And imagine ed educating your staff. Like, hey, right now you guys all seen this email, so we can't mention the race right now. So what I want you to do is mention that it's not available, but we have other studies. That way, like, you don't get in trouble, because if you come out with that response, they don't care that it's not your order. They just think, yeah, we can't. Black people are not welcome here. Even white people, I mean, we're gonna have to turn away. We've actually have turned away like Caucasian people right now because of our this trial, but we don't use that answer. We use the how about this study for now.
Well, I mean, I guess it's part of the study protocol. You think about inclusion, exclusion criteria, and you think about, we're trying to identify these people within these boundaries. And everyone is not going to qualify for this. So it is, so I get it, and it's a challenge. So you have my wheel spinning, but I think
I even have this, like, occasionally, like, patients, especially when they click an ad, we'll end up chatting with them. We have an admin now that's full time, that's all they do. But before him, it was me doing it, and I've been cussed out by patients. Like, hey, you know what? You're bipolar, and the study's for de just for depression. Then they'll come back with, F you just wanted my info. You're just BSing, so you don't have to pay me. I do have depression. Like, it's, and that's mental illness, that's behavioral health. But you still feel bad, because if I had a bipolar study, I can just put that patient in that study instead. But instead, now I'm having conversation with someone that clearly needs help, and I have nothing to tell them, and their delusions are going to make them think whatever they want, and there's nothing I can do. So the more studies I can have, the better, really, for me as a site. And I don't care too much about competing trials or any of this kind of stuff. But I know sponsors, they do look at that. They're like, well, how many trials do you have, for this indication? Because we don't want to give you too many. Now you're competing, but I don't look at it that way. I look at it as another place to put a patient that maybe doesn't qualify, but I want them to still have a good experience with research.
Yeah, I think that just depends on a sponsor. Of course, you want to make sure that you have the capacity at your site, that you have the staff to be able to manage that. I just think it depends on the sponsor, running your competing trials.
What about like the big pharma now? It seems like they're getting more involved. I think it's because of a lot of it to do with the diversity standpoint. Maybe also some quality stuff, but I've noticed like the not the RFP, what is it? FSP model, where like some of the bigger pharma that could afford, to have dedicated team at big CROs. It's almost like your own employees in a way. Do you get involved with any of that stuff as a site engagement or not really?
Not really, because we have both, we have in-house and and outsource too. So it depends, on how large or how quick. It just different factors play into what we use, but we have probably 150, I don't know, CREs in-house.
Yeah, that's huge. What about MSL, Medical Science Liaisons? Oftentimes, that's a good way to get newer sites, maybe, with potential. Like, there is a balance between having experience versus having the patients you want. So, if a study really needs Hispanic patients, but the site has slightly less experience, like that has to go into some kind of algorithm for you guys, right? Do you work with the MSLs in any way, or do you give these newer sites a chance?
So we communicate cross-functionally. We all speak. That's why if someone goes to one person in our group, they're going to come right back to me if they've never worked at AZ before, because they push in it, but we're a small group, so you can't just like go this place, that place, and that place. It's not good a good practice for someone to, especially if you're assigned a point of contact, that could turn off someone in the group because everyone in the organization knows that you're the point of contact. And
I
you go
see.
to three different people and they all get the emails as if you didn't respond to an individual can make things a little less efficient. And they're thinking of a way to set up a call, we're thinking of a way, and they end up having to come through one process. And it helps them if they just stay focused and have their single point of contact, because we're thinking strategically overall, regardless of if you have one study, if you've never done a study, there's plans that are behind the scenes to ensure that we've looked across, what their experiences are, their patients, if we're aligned. There's different things that, we would be looking for, so and feedback from the teams, who may look at the evidence that we have of what they've done, or talk about, okay, if you don't have any experience, what do you need? What, how can we make sure that you're successful in that way? So in a little bit too much, but it's the way of thinking is, for me anyway, is really to set anyone up for success. And I'm not talking about anything outside of, GCP, is as a partner, being transparent and making sure that you communicate to us where there may be gaps, or if there's something that we need an experience, that maybe we need to, go there and spend a little bit more time on the protocol,
So even during a study, like the engagement is not just feasibility, and that's it. You want the
Oh,
site, the goal is
but
for the
again,
site to have a sounding board at the sponsor.
all the way through, and to become true partners,
That's
and help.
beneficial. That's beneficial. You know, as a site, there was a study a year ago with a small biotech, but they used the CRO, and I was kind of getting mad at the way the CRO was acting on certain things, and they wouldn't budge, and it caused like a couple of patients to not be able to get qualified when I knew they really should have been. So I brought it up to my CRA. CRA said, look, like, you know, it's not gonna work this way. I went to the sponsor, and the sponsor basically heard me out and said, no, the patient should get in. And they made noise and it made it happen. But I feel like I burned the bridge with the CRO because they were like, you know, very delicate with me going forward. And that wasn't the intent. The intent was to get this one or two patients in because they were distraught that they can't get in over some technicality. So sites sometimes are hesitant to reach out because they don't want to burn the bridge with the, like, they don't want the CRO to feel like you're going above them, you know, to their boss. Because, like, I mean, you're technically like in charge on the hierarchy, you know, sponsor, CRO, site. And you don't want to jump the CRO, but it's affecting your human being. Like, this patient is distraught. They can't get in because a blood draw was not done in 30 days. It was done in like 33. Like, we'll take the deviation. Who cares? And it worked. Patient got in, but the CRO got upset. So, like, there's a fear that, like, especially when it's a smaller sponsor, I'm more likely to get another study from the CRO than the sponsor ever again. So I kind of don't want to do that, but you also don't want to sacrifice like this patient not getting in when you know that they can.
For a situation like that, I mean, it's one, I like, again, partnership is really understanding the individual and how ways of working. I can see the CRO protecting themselves, you know, because if anything comes back there, you know, if it wasn't a protocol deviation, or if they have tons of them, or if the, it was a quality issue, or they're thinking they're being conservative to protect themselves. I don't know if maybe approach could be is have them, can you follow up with the sponsor just to make sure, because you know, because we re you know, communicating that this is a good patient, we know this patient is going to be reliable, you know, things like that, to see if we can accomplish this without it having to go that far. But then your interest is for patients. They're in the interest of making sure that they follow the sponsor guidelines. So it's like y'all, you both have your interests that you have to
That's where the
protect.
clash was. That's
So
where the
yeah, so you
clash was.
have to like look at how can I partner with you immediately so that we could accomplish the same goal that we have. We have to be aligned. And even with site engagement, I feel like, okay, I thought we were aligned, but we're not. You know what I'm saying? And it can cause pressure on it, and it can break down trust, because the purpose, the partnership is about trust that you're going to deliver and you're going to do it within these parameters. And I'm agreeing to this. That's what the partnership is. I'm agreeing to these boundaries. So if I agree to these boundaries and I go outside of those boundaries, then I've broken the level of trust that I have. And it could be challenging because we have our interests that we serve. I'm very pro-site, you know, but I work for a sponsor. I'm also, I don't know if you know that I founded my own company,
No,
Genesis Medical Research Group.
I saw that on your profile. I was gonna get into that. Like, this could easily be a 3-hour podcast. What do you do? What do you do with with your own company?
So I love to do workshops. I love to do workshops on clinical trial diversity. And I've done a lot of research on different groups, you know, starting with my own, because when I started in clinical research, I didn't know anyone else in clinical research. And I looked at the studies that I worked on, and I didn't see Black participation in clinical trials. I worked in patient recruitment, and I'm like, some of these ads, I don't think reflect me. It was just a lot of different things that I just didn't see where I fit into this puzzle. And once it became more of a discussion and they talked about it, like from an FDA perspective, I would sit in meetings and I was like, I know the answer to why, and it was like, okay, okay, people get it now that patients, especially African Americans, I'm just going to focus on that, right? The point right now is the lack of trust. And, I said, I have a solution, and the solution that, I was thinking about was this solution can cover a lot of different people, whether it's LGBTQIA plus community or whatever, but there's a foundation that anyone in clinical research needs to have. You need to understand health disparities. You need to understand systemic racism. You need to understand the biases. You need to understand these atrocities that has happened to make patients not want to participate. So I created e-learning modules that touch on these areas, and you can get a certification through my e-learning modules online, or I can come and do workshops and do presentations. We could do a week
You're
by week.
teaching like the industry, like people in the industry or outsiders?
Oh, anyone. So I could tailor the training for the group. I started out with healthcare professionals and clinical trial sites. They were the first that I worked on, like, because I know I can't be everywhere. So I created modules that has a mixture of videos and ebook style.
I love that. We gotta get you on Latinos in Clinical Research, one of our webinars. I was on a panel, a diversity panel, like 2 years ago around COVID, and they were talking specifically about African Americans getting in trials. And I said, when will pharma admit Tuskegee was not a myth? Like, that's, they just wanna, like, okay, we acknowledge it, we brush it aside. But that is generational distrust that no one's ever taken ownership to address. And I
And that's
feel like
part of the
it should have been like the big pharma, like a consortium. If they can come together and make SIP, Shared Investigator Portal, why can't they come together and make, like, Tuskegee was not a myth, but here's what we've done, to change things since then.
And
I
that's
think
what my learning modules are about. That's
yeah.
exactly what modules are about. I have a lesson on the FDA guidance, to break it down for some of those who really don't know, and from a sponsor perspective, so that you know what sponsors expect you to do, what
Yeah.
they're looking for from a site. So I look at it at a lens from what the site might anticipate, what a sponsor will be looking for, and what a sponsor might anticipate what a site might be thinking. So it's like it kind of takes you a little bit back and forth as you go through the modules on what it
Yeah.
is. It's difficult to do that because no one likes those modules that you have to go click, 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 click through. Try to get you to engage in it, pay attention to some key terms that you need to understand. But I prefer to do face-to-face workshops. But I think it's the foundation to clinical research is not just Black history. It's just the history of clinical research, understanding it, what those biases are. And there's literature to back up and substantiate some of the reasons why people don't trust or why there's a lack of participation in trials and where the blind spots are for us in the industry, thinking we may know everything. And people
Yeah.
think, I know diversity. I got this. No, you don't. Well, why aren't you doing it? You've been doing this for 25 years and you've been in the industry all this time and you don't do diversity.
So frustrating, because a
It
lot of the
is
big
frustrating.
pharma, I think if people knew, like the general public, big pharma is like top two, one or two, maybe three most distrusted brands in the
Worse than the
world. Like,
tobacco industry or the gun.
worse than tobacco. Like, but they're all doing all this, like, stuff internally, like diversity boards. They're doing actual things in the community. I feel like they are trying to make the industry better, but they've never taken ownership of this. Tuskegee was not a myth. If you go to Africa and see what they did there back in the 80s and 90s, that's not a myth. If you go to India and see what they did there, I understand why no one wants to take ownership, is those companies, those people hopefully are all prosecuted, but I feel like the NIH, the FDA, and like a consortium of big pharma should get together and put like a public awareness thing. Like, this is what we've done since then to rectify the situation. I think that would at least be, do a lot for like
Acknowledging
the
it.
general consensus.
I don't know if you know that. I think it was President Clinton had made an apology for the Tuskegee experiment and had the survivors receive. They were elderly. I don't know. Henrietta Lacks, her family was just acknowledged last year for what they did with her HeLa cells. But it's not really talked about like that because a lot of people don't know unless you're really directly touching it. And maybe some people have scratched the surface about it, but really don't know. So my program that I put together is a certification. You don't have to be an expert, but you have to understand the foundation, talking about Henrietta Lacks, talking about, Tuskegee, talking about health disparities. Why, there are health disparities? What's the difference? What is equity versus equality? They're not the same, So if you are talking about this diversity topic, is to be informed about certain aspects of it so that you cannot solve a problem if you don't understand the problem. You got to deal with the root. And the root is our country needs to heal. We need to face it. Deal with it because you can't solve a problem if somebody don't acknowledge that that was a problem.
The problem was, hopefully was in the past tense, people that lack certain resources, financial, educational, get taken advantage of. I mean, that's bottom line, that was the problem. In US, in other countries, that's been the problem. And in clinical research, no different. Probably the most, shocking and egregious examples of that are in our industry. So for us to have assurances that that's no longer the case and make that like public would go a long way for the industry.
Absolutely. And see, and I keep going back to the learning modules that I created. And we talk about institutional review boards. We talk about the FDA. We talk about those because the FDA won't allow pharma to talk directly to patients. So we have to go through sites, and sites have to be our communication with patients. Most of the trust that patients don't have is the healthcare system. So it's not just one. It could be, atrocities that happen because of the government that they think that that was, pharma. Or if pharma did something, they think it was the government. It's all of it. So if one person does something, if one pharmaceutical company falls, all of the pharmaceutical companies are being looked at. And while I was on a panel the other day, I was speaking and I was like, I would like to start something called One Voice. I was thinking Pharma One or something that all of us who are engaged in this industry, right? Stakeholders who are in the industry, advocacy groups, partners, vendors, pharma, community engagement, all of us come together to say, wait a minute, let's step back and take a look at this. They still have, their interests for patients, patient advocacy groups. We all come into the table and they're making sure that there's some oversight. It's not just the IRBs and you have your patient advocacy groups who give their have a seat at the table. You have community organizations who are having a seat at the table. You have pharma, the vendors, because all of us need to have a voice to be able to communicate to the community and be able to say, call us on certain situations, to be able to say, no, this is, to be transparent. I think that's truly the only way, not just pockets, well, we're doing this and we're doing that, is inconsistent to the community. And there's no real way to build trust in the community if it's fragmented. I'm now ambassador. for American Cancer Society, and they're doing a study on 100,000 Black women. And they're going, after they get them enrolled, they're going to follow them for 30 years. They can have any history of breast cancer. So they're going to be following their diet. They're going to be talking about barriers. They want to know what the barriers are so that they can come up with solutions to help Black women not be impacted disproportionately from different health disparities. You know, so that's a commitment from the American Cancer Society alone. I mean, they have partners with people, different sponsors donating and different things, but I'm looking at this model like this is what we need to do, but on a grander scale, not just, you know, focused on one particular area. The industry to have that collaboration. We need ambassadors, you know, who and that's what I want Genesis, my company, Genesis Medical Research Group, to do is have all of our people who hold certificates are ambassadors. You can go to them and they will know how to speak about diversity and what changes we need to make and how we can impact the community and how we can engage the community.
We'll definitely need a part two or three. We gotta get you on the Latinos in Clinical Research webinar too. Kind of the last thing I want to ask you. There's a lot of consolidation now at the site level. A lot of sites becoming one big group. I went to an investigator meeting 6 months ago. I kid you not, half of the sites were part of a couple of big groups. And the rest were like mine, just independent. So it's like half is a lot. That's half of the sites are like one or two companies. What do you think? How do you think that plays out with diversity, with transparency, with community sentiment? Just again, your opinion, not your company's. Consolidation, good or bad at the local level for communities.
I think there's some benefits, and there's also going to be some challenges. Because, you know, I think, you know, the benefits to having one contact, you might get lost. Or is it that you're all following the same SOPs? Are they getting trained that they're getting the mentorship? They're getting, you know, the benefits of streamlined processes. You know, they're effective at what they do. Because I can think of one company that I'm so proud of their network, you know, because they have it nailed down and they work collaboratively, even though they're individual sites, they're following a work stream, you know, and it's easier to work with them and we know what to expect. And it's we don't have to get to know, you know, each one of them individually, but we know the spirit of what their organization brings. And you know, if they have 12 sites, then that makes sense for us. That we know all of them, then get to meet all 12. But I'm a people person, so I like getting to know all 12. But does time permit that? It no, it doesn't. And that's where the risk and the challenge is. And then once, you know, as long as that organization know that it's not a one size fits all, right? So this group that I'm talking about, they actually have each site maybe customized. They all work the same, but they have a different demographic. And when they don't have a lot of the demographic, they're going to have to switch and get best practices, or they can, you know, so they use each other as a support system and they vibe off of each other. I like it. So
I see the good and bad, like you. I don't know how it ends because I mean you can't argue it's happening though. The qual I do think the quality will get better. Big systems tend to like drive quality and for the sake of the profit, so their incentives are aligned with getting quality up increased because of increased efficiency, basically increased profits. What I fear is that kind of almost analogous to that meme I'm said with, you know, get everyone looking different going through a corporate door, everyone comes out the same. That's good for quality. Might be bad for the grassroots spirit. You know, one of the things that makes sites, small sites hungry is that they are small and that their staff are empowered to do more like ours. I'm expecting someone to walk through this door any minute now. I'm telling them, go out in the community, do whatever you need to do to get patients, like get the word out. I feel like at a bigger the corporation, they say, well, what's our process for that? Okay, well, no, you can't do that. No, you can't go this way.
That's why you
To
can't judge
where.
everyone. That's why you can't be a part of everyone. You got to be able to ask those questions. If you lose your identity, then you done lost
Yes.
your sauce. You done lost what brought you the patients in. You know, that's what you can't lose your sauce. That's why you should go to them, you know, because you bring in something different to the table because you have, you know, that other than that, I might as well stay where I'm at, you know. We're
Well, it
going
just
to
boils down to like,
identity.
what's the incentive? I think Charlie Munger, who passed away, said, if you show me the incentives, I show you the outcome. The incentive for getting patients is high, but the incentive for quality might be higher. I don't know. I don't know which one wins because those two things at some point go against each other. And there's got to be a balance, but I fear that could be one of the negative outcomes. I don't think it's the quality thing like the SMO bubble of last time, which you remember the SMO bubble. That was lack of quality, right? I think this time around won't be lack of quality. I think actually quality will increase, but I think you'll lose potentially some of that secret sauce, like you said.
I mean, that has to be a choice. It has to be a choice. And
Not
it
an
has to
easy one.
But you know, but you know, and you have to, and you have to fight for it. You have to fight for it, or find a network that you, if you need to be a part of one, is find one that matches you. You know, like you match my energy. You know, so it has.
Yeah.
You should align with the same mission and vision, because if not, you setting yourself up for failure from the beginning.
Yep. I think entrepreneurs and employees, which you are both, have a lot more in common than people think. It's just at what scale you're looking at it. And Gaina, someone that everyone should connect with, we definitely have to do more because this is not enough time to cover. You've been in this industry for a while. You're a trailblazer doing things no one's telling you to do because you feel like it needs to be done. And congrats to you and all your success. I'm really glad I met you. And I look forward to more of these interviews. Everybody connect with her.
Thank you so much, Dan. It was a pleasure. Thank you for reaching out to me. And I'm glad to have this conversation with you. Yes, we could talk. I'm a talker. And I know you have a lot of ideas and stuff to talk about too. So I'm glad we connected, and I will see you on LinkedIn land. I
Yes. And
look forward
hopefully in
to it.
person one of these days. We want to do more
Yes.
studies with you guys too. Like, subscribe, comment, share. Go connect with Gaina right now. Bye bye.